And now, it's time to sit back and enjoy the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Broadcast.
Hope and Chris finish the last episode of Star Wars The Clone Wars. Luckily, dependable Dave Filoni and crew create Rebels with new characters, new places, and new adventures, thus keeping hope alive for this podcast. Welcome to J-Guys and Jedi.
Hi everyone, welcome to a brand new episode of J-Guys and Jedi, a weekly podcast covering every episode of Star Wars Rebels. You can't see it right now, but I'm making finger guns. Pew pew! Pew pew, pew pew! In this episode, the Rebels finally locate a potential site for a secret base, but they find their new home is not as isolated as originally believed. There will be googly-eyed spiders! And one last adventure for the space family, you know, before everything goes to hell next week. We're talking Mystery of Chopper Base. How you doing, Chris?
Good.
That's good. You missed my... You got outside, you can't see my finger guns. Pew, pew.
No, I guess not. I know what they look like, though.
Pew, pew.
I've seen finger guns before.
Yeah, but even though... You having a good week?
Yeah, so far, so good. I'm starting my new job. Still working for the same place, but a new location tomorrow.
Oh, so it starts tomorrow. Okay, I couldn't remember if you started today or tomorrow.
Nope, tomorrow.
Oh, I can't wait to hear how it goes. I hope you like it.
It should be. It's going to be nice because it's close by. So now it's not a 20-minute car ride to work. I can ride my bike there.
God, even in the winter?
It depends on how much salt they put down on the road. If they put down salt on the road, I won't ride my bike on it because it ruins your chain on your bike and all your gear derailleurs and stuff. Costs like $150 to get it all replaced. So I'll probably walk for a chunk of the winter, but it's not a bad walk either. I don't mind. I like walking.
I can't fathom that cold.
I dress in like 15 different layers, so it's not that big a deal.
Meanwhile, it's mid-September here, and it's still fucking 95 degrees outside.
Yeah, I'm listening to all my Georgia friends are griping about how hot it is.
I just want to wear leggings and, like, do my white girl thing and drink pumpkin spice lattes. I just want to wear my leggings and have lattes. And actually, what I really want to do is, it's currently apple season, but it's just been too hot. But I want to take a day trip up to the mountains and go apple picking in our, because LJ, which is a few hours away from my house, is like has all these apple orchards like all everywhere. But it's just been so hot, and like apple picking's kind of like a fall thing, but it's only apple season to like mid-October, so I'm looking at the clock going, okay, we got like 4 weeks left of apple season. Like this cold wet, like I need some like fall weather so I can like go drink apple cider up in Ellijay and not melt. So I'm just like, come on, fall, get here. Even though that by the time this episode comes out, it's gonna be October, fall. So yeah. But I'm excited to talk about some spitters.
Spitters?
Some spitters, which is what I also call spiders. I call them spitter friends. So what do you think of this episode?
I liked it. I don't think it's one of, you know, I think it's nice little rest. It's not a goofy episode, but it's just a nice little placeholder before, as you said, the shit hits a fan. Shit's gonna hit the fan.
Yeah, because like this was, I've only seen this episode once before I rewatched it today, and so I caught so much in it, and like it's so different knowing what's coming. Because before, like the first time I watched it, I didn't know what the heart-wrenching next week is going to be. I didn't know what Twilight of the Apprentice was going to be. And so when it came to this episode, I was like, oh, cool. And, you know, like, they're about to go on their thing. It's not, you know, they're Jedi. They're the good guys. It's not a big deal. And now, like, I'm watching this episode. I'm like, Hera's so worried about Kanan.
The sword is leaving. Damocles hangs above them.
I know. They're all going to, like, Kanan's going to, like, come back blind. And Maul and Ahsoka's going to be, like, it's such a different watch knowing what's happening. Because, like, you just don't have that context when you watch. Like, it could just be, like, a run-the-mill, like, little adventure episode. They're setting up a base. Yeah, the Jedi are leaving, but they're the good guys. You're not expecting anything bad to happen. But it's just, like, night and day. So, like, I do have much more appreciation for this episode the second time around. Because I know what's coming. And there are parts of this where I'm just like, oh, don't do it. So... Well, are you ready to get into this one?
I am.
All right. Actually, let me get a sip of my water. My seltzer water. Let me burp. All right. Ready?
There you go.
Yeah, I got my seltzer water. So, here we go. Did I write a Yoda question this week?
Yes, you did.
Okay, I couldn't remember if I wrote a Yoda question. All right. So... The Mystery of Chopper Base is the 35th episode of Star Wars Rebels. Doesn't it seem like we're just flying through Rebels?
Yeah, that's because as you get older, time goes by faster.
You know, I was thinking about that today, because, like, and maybe it was just because Clone Wars has, like, two extra seasons tacked on to it. So, like, when we finished the second season of Clone Wars, we still had, like, four more seasons left.
Hell, we aren't even done with Clone Wars yet.
Yeah, like, we were, like... Because it took us a year to do season one and season two, which is taking us here. But I guess it's just different because Rebels is only four seasons. So, like, we're now halfway done with Rebels when we were only a third of the way done with Clone Wars. So it just feels like we're flying through Rebels so much faster than we got through Clone Wars. Clone Wars just felt like it was like, this was fun, but it took forever. So, anyways, all right. The Mystery of Chopper Base is the 35th episode of Star Wars Rebels. And it was released on March 23rd, 2016. It was written by Stephen Melching and directed by Bosco Ng. Some extra information for you. The googly-eyed spiders, which is what I'm going to call them because they have googly eyes, are called Krikna. The Krikna is based on concept artwork by Ralph McQuarrie of a Dagobah lifeform called the Knobby White Spider, which first appeared in the Kevin J. Anderson's 1995 Star Wars Legends novel Darksaber. The smaller shell creatures are called Dachma.
I'm going to call them scrubbing bubbles.
Oh my god, they are scrubbing bubbles. Oh, they are like little living scrubbing bubbles. That's cute.
I thought they were babies of the spiders at first, but I was like, oh, look.
That makes sense.
I was waiting for them to just start foaming up the rocks.
That makes sense. I could see them, like, possibly being babies. Zeb calls the creatures that annoy him Bogans. Bogan was an early word used in the Star Wars scripts to describe the dark side. The opening sparring match is the first on-screen appearance of a lightsaber in training mode. It has a dimmer shade, and it produces an entirely different sound. The training mode lightsabers sting, but it does not cut or burn. Cut or burn. In Rebels Recon for the episode, they talk about how the planet Adalon, where the Rebels find their new base, is well off any major hyperspace routes. I'm also glad you guys can't see my notes because I just didn't give a fuck about how I spelled Adalon. I don't even know if it's right. There are also no real resources here, so the Empire isn't at this planet. It's also in an unexplored part of space that's not on any Imperial star charts. Even though there's no oceans, they wanted to have an aquatic feel with coral trees and crab-like creatures. Dave Filoni wanted to have creatures that could camouflage into the environment to where you could see one and not even realize it's an animal. They also said the reason that the spiders have six legs and not eight is honestly... It was easy for the animation department to make and two less legs to deal with. They also talk about Ezra's inability to connect with the spiders. He's had success after success after success with connecting with other animals. That not being connected with the spiders is a roadblock and a blow to his ego. Pablo Hidalgo said it's part of the spider's natures. There are some things in nature that are inherently dangerous. The spiders are not evil, but they're just being themselves in the world. Dave Filoni talked about how Ezra's good with connecting with things of his time, like Lothcats. But now they're in a part of the galaxy that's older, weirder, and different. And Ezra has trouble because he can't relate to these things. He's currently only able to relate to things that he understands them. And finally, in July of 2017, Dave Filoni shared on his Twitter a deleted scene and image from this episode that didn't make it in. It was about Tom Baker's character from Season 3, the Bindu, having a conversation with Ahsoka Tano before her confrontation with Vader. I'm going to read the scene. Do you want to read Bindu and I'll read Ahsoka?
Sure.
All right, so Dave Filoni wrote, "It just occurred to me that I never got to tell you all of the story of the time that Bindu met Ahsoka Tano. It was a brief encounter, which took place around the end of the episode, The Mystery of Chopper Base, from Season 2, just before Ahsoka, Kanan, and Ezra left on their fateful mission to Malachor. Of their conversation, you might find this dialogue to be most interesting."
Okay, Bindu said, "You are set on this confrontation, then?"
"I have to know the truth."
"So be it. But understand this, much will change as a result of this encounter, including you."
"Isn't that true of all things as time advances?"
"My dear, when I say change, I mean death."
"So I will die."
"Will you? I didn't know that. Goodbye then, Ahsoka Tano, former Jedi Knight."
And I think that's a really interesting, and there's a lovely picture. Like, just Google Bindu and Ahsoka, and you'll see this amazing photo that Dave Filoni has drawn. Can we have just, like, a Dave Filoni art book, please? Like, I will spend money on just a book of Dave Filoni sketches. But, like, it's, I have a note about this later in season, in Act 3, but I think it, well, I'll just wait till that, because my note is pretty much just, like, what would we think if we got Bindu not in season 3 when we were first introduced to him?
Yeah, it's neat the second time. The first, for one, I think it's giving away a little too much. Mm-hmm. And B, it would have been, there would have been just too much of like, what's going on here, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I don't know. I think it would have been a little too early. And I think they were wise not to foreshadow that much in this show, in this episode. So
I did notice in the final conversation with Ahsoka and Ezra, like right before the credits roll, Ahsoka's just looking out. Like, she's not even looking at Ezra the entire time. She's just looking out at the coral trees. So I'm wondering if like that was an animation note from like this scene being cut, that she was looking out towards like where Bindu was.
Sure. Yeah.
And I was wondering about that. And it kind of felt the same way too. Like, as cool as this is, to know that, like, Ahsoka and Bindu, like, met and had this conversation. Because there's a lot to this conversation, too, in, like, the very few lines of dialogue. But I agree. I think it would have been a little bit too weird and too early. Because, like, we've been on Adelon, what, like, 5 minutes? And it's just, like, another thing to add. So I do agree. I do think
it would have been out of place with the rest of this episode, too.
Yeah.
Just the feel of the rest of this episode.
I could see it, like, maybe if they slid the scene in somewhere, like, Kanan or Ezra had, like, a vision of Bindu and Ahsoka talking or something. That could have been a place to put it in. Or even in the world between worlds, as, like, Ezra was, like, walking by one of the windows, like, we heard Ahsoka and Bindu talking. Like, that could have been a cool thing, too, like, have, like, in all the background dialogue. But as cool as this is, and to know that this was out there, I do agree. I don't think this would have been a good episode to introduce the Bindu.
I'm sure that's why they cut it out.
Yoda, what do you think of the Bindu?
Kind of an asshole.
Really? But he's a rock in a stream. He's just there. He's not life, he's not
stream. Bindu's a rock in a stream.
And what are you,
Bindu alone? Knows not of time.
And what are you?
To say stupid things and go, oh, it's all about time.
And what are you, a lump of a log of Dagobah? Hi, Yoda. How you doing this week?
Okay, I guess.
No. Did you? I think you're lovely, Yoda. I'm sorry. I'm just making fun of you. I think you're cool and I love you a lot. Here, have a cookie.
Bendu's old and smells funny.
Probably smells like a bunch of, like, birds shitting on him, actually. And spiders crawling on him and laying eggs on him.
Pooping on Bendu.
Well, I have a question for you, Yoda.
A question right? for Yoda.
Mm-hmm. That's not about the Bendu, I promise. That just kind of spurred up. So this episode ends with Ezra, Kanan, and Ahsoka going to Malachor to face the Inquisitors. Do you have any last words for them?
Oh, See you. Be you I would not want to be.
Bye, Yoda. That
yeah.
Nice. He's gone. He got out of here fast.
Yeah. Like, a little merciless, that little guy.
Yeah.
No
well,
mercy.
They did catch him in, like, his, like, bathrobes and shroud of darkness, so.
Yeah.
Well.
Griping about people being old and smelling funny. That's hilarious.
I know, right? Like, he's old. I mean, you just gotta give it to him. He's old.
He smells like Italian dressing.
That was a very visceral, like, image. Like, I don't mind the smell of Italian dressing, but I can, like, see it smelling on an
not old... coming off a little, yeah, no.
Yeah, it's so much different when it's on a person. I just smelt that, like, in my brain. My brain just
well, you
must have
dealt
smell.
It then.
Oh, it's fine on a salad, but on a Yoda, it's, my stomach just churned a little bit. All right, well, you ready to get into this?
I am.
All right, act one. Act one.
Act one.
Act one. We start with the rebels setting up their base on Adalon that they discovered last episode. They're making runs back and forth from their carrier to the planet. Anyway, down below... Down below, Ezra and Kanan are in super training mode, getting ready for their showdown with the Inquisitors. They tie in their duel, as in no one wins. I was like, what are they tying together? They tie in their duel, which is frustrating to Ezra, but Kanan is really trying hard to make him see it's about survival. As Hera is watching them spar, she starts to frown and look really worried. Sabine notices this too. They land on the planet where they are greeted by Rex. Grunkle Rex, my lovely Grunkle Rex. And they're all getting the base all set up nicely. They have found a water source, they're setting up all these sensors all over the area. The planet is hot and dry and feels like Georgia right now, but there's no empire there. It's a nice place for them to finally settle in. But out in the wastes, one of the pilots is setting up some sensors. She sees the little scrubbing bubble crab shell things running away for their lives under her feet. Turning, she's suddenly attacked by a googly-eyed spider! And she screams and probably dies terribly. R.I.P. Nameless Lady, who is named later, I think her name is Dicer? I don't know. But whatever, rest in peace. Back on the base, Kanan says that Hera has everything she needs for her rebel life now. But she points out that she won't have her space husband or her space son, Ezra. Kanan, who at the beginning of the season was very against all this rebel stuff, understands now that they have to fight for a bigger picture and a bigger cause that has to be protected, which means getting rid of the Inquisitors. Our rebels get a report that of the missing pilot, Dicer, so Hera sends Grunkle Rex and Sabine out in the Phantom minivan to check it out. Ezra goes out to the edge of the base to find Zeb, jamming out to some rock music and watching the sunset. Ezra is unsure about this mission that him and Kanan are going on, so Zeb hands Ezra, a miner, what appears to be a can of beer, and tells Ezra to relax and not talk down about themselves. It's bad luck. Zeb says that Ezra will be back, and they might even have toppled the Empire by then, and then they can swap war stories. Sabine and Rex are out looking for the missing pilot. And suddenly, the rocks rise out, and it's more googly-eyed spiders! What you can't see is I'm, like, shaking my head, like when you shake a googly-eyes to make them go, blah. I'm shaking my head every time I say, googly-eyed spiders! And their blasters do no good, and my precious Grunkle Rex is taken by the spitters. What'd you think of Act 1?
Not bad, not bad.
I have to cover my vent. I forgot to cover my vent before I started recording, and now I'm cold.
I didn't realize that their sabers had practice mode, so I did notice, like, geez, their sabers certainly sound high-pitched. And, of course, I mentioned the scrubbing bubbles. There's a old movie. It's in the public access now. You could probably find it. It's probably on YouTube 1,000 times over, called Fantastic Planet. And they have these little scrubbing bubble creatures that are very much like this. And they would it was a weird, trippy, very storybook-like illustrated thing. And they had these little tiny people. It was very Gulliver's Travels like, and this species of tiny people, and they would get their outfits from these scrubbing bubble sort of creatures would just sort of foam up around them, and then the foam would dry into like an outfit.
They
reminded me a lot of those.
You know, because Steven Universe recent, like in the last season, because like, you know, all the crystal gems are space rocks, and so like you have like the diamonds are like the top, they're the leaders. And then you have, like, pearls, who are, like, the servant class and stuff like that. But they have in their palace pebbles, and they're just these tiny little people, and they, like, make chairs and, like, make outfits and stuff. So I wonder if that's a callback to that movie.
It could be. The movie was a lot of people, I would imagine Filoni's probably seen that movie.
What's the name of the movie?
Fantastic Planet. You would love Fantastic Planet.
I feel like you told me about this before.
It's very good. I'll find it and send you a link to it on the YouTubes. I'm sure it's on YouTube. It's been in the public domain for years and years. What else do I've got? What else does I got here? I noted Zeb listening to some space rock, which sounds oddly like early 90s, like, Steve Vai type, you know, instrumental rock.
It also sounds a little bit like very early Clone Wars rock that you used to hate, like when they used to use like rock music in Clone Wars episodes.
That had almost a little more of a techno electronic beat.
But
you
used to rant about that.
This
it's
was
different
more like
here though.
Very melodic 90s, like middle of the road instrumental rock.
I do kind of like that moment, too, to, like, because it is very different from, like, the rest of Kevin Kiner's score, which is, like, because, like, you, if you listen to, like, the Rebels.
Well, because it's, like, it's, what do they call it? Diegetic music. It's coming from his radio.
I know.
You know, so it's just background music. And the only other notes I had is there's a hammerhead. It's not hammerhead. Love that hammerhead. And Convors.
Oh, the ship. Sorry. Yeah. I was like, where was there a hammerhead shark in this? I just realized you're talking about the ship.
The hammerhead blockade runner.
Yeah.
That we get to see do so much damage in Rogue Squadron.
Rogue One.
Rogue Squadron's a video game. That's right. All right, and Convors. Got a couple Convors flying around.
Yeah, we do, because Ahsoka's coming in this episode.
Hanging you around, always listen to the rock music.
Yeah, you always see the Convors around Ahsoka, so.
But that's all I had for part one.
Well, for me, I never realized that lightsabers had a training mode either until I was doing the show notes, because I always do the notes first, like the background notes before I do the episodes. So when I saw that, I was like, oh, really? So I did notice it a lot more because I was looking for it. And I like that, I remember there's a part where Kanan's, like, blade just, like, went across the wall and it didn't do any damage. And, like, it does have a different sound. And so I just think that's cool. I never knew that lightsabers had a training mode until I did the show notes for this episode. So I like that Ezra is struggling a bit with the idea of killing an Inquisitor. Because for one, he's a kid, so I'm glad that they're giving him a little bit of a pause on that, like, because before they've always been kind of, like, defending themselves, like, block, 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 and run away, but, like, now, like, they're taking the battle to the Inquisitors. So, like, I like that the child of this episode is like, I don't know if I can kill an Inquisitor.
I don't want to cut somebody in half. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think that's a really kind of nice character moment for Ezra, because it's kind of different with Ahsoka in Clone Wars, because Ahsoka was trained to be a child soldier. Ezra is a kid who kind of fell into this. So, like, they're two very different characters. So it's nice that they gave him that pause, so he's not just like, yeah, I'm going to fucking kill an Inquisitor, because that'd be very out of character for him if he was like that. And I also like, it kind of pushes pushes Yoda's message from Shroud of Darkness a few weeks ago. Because Ezra doesn't want to kill, but Kanan is kind of flipping that word a little bit. Like, he's like, we're not killing, we're surviving. Because it's not about about them fighting, it's about how they're choosing to fight. So I liked that Kanan took that moment and was like, we're not murdering them, like, we're surviving against them. And it was just kind of like a swap, like, flipping that word a little bit for him. Hera's getting worried about her space family. Like, it's dawning on her, and I have this broken into, like, several parts, because, like, this kept popping up in Act 1. Like, it's dawning on her as she's watching Kanan training with Ezra that Kanan is stepping up more and more to this Jedi role, really for the first time in their relationship. Like, he's always been kind of a Jedi, but, like, through Season 1, like, Kanan was kind of figuring out, like, what it means to be a Jedi and, like, what it means to be a teacher. But now Season 2, like, he is a Jedi Knight. He got knighted. And and it's kind of nice to see Hera for the first time, like, realizing what it means to be a Jedi Knight. And it means that Kanan's on a path that she can't always follow.
Yeah, their larger stories are going in different directions.
Yeah. So,
at least for the time being.
Yeah. And this episode reminded me a lot more and more as I was watching it of the episode where Kanan died. Like, you could tell that Kanan knew in that episode that he was going somewhere where everything would change. And Hera's acting a lot like Kanan did in that episode. Like, Hera is starting to realize that everything is about to change, and she has kind of that sixth sense about it. And it's just kind of cool, because it's kind of like that parent intuition. Like, Kanan in that episode was like, if we go after Hera, like, something's going to happen. And I have that feeling. And Hera has that too. Like, if they leave, like, something's going to happen. And I like that they both kind of had that sixth sense. Also, Kanan's come a long way through this season. Like, remember, like, the very first episode, he was back-talking to Sato and, like, undermining Hera and was saying how he wasn't comfortable with all this. And here he is this episode going, no, like, this is important that you do this. You have a base. This is an important thing. And so, like, Kanan's come really a long way in 22 episodes. Yeah, so it's really been... I think Kanan's probably the character to me that's changed the most this season. I think he really is. Everybody else has been kind of like, yeah, this has been
If he isn't now, he will be soon.
Yeah, like, this has been a very transformational season for everybody, except for probably Hera, who's been very just steadfast the whole time. But Kanan's the one that's gone from, like, night and day. So, and I really like the scene with Zeb and Ezra. Like, in a way, like, sort of saying their goodbyes, but it's kind of nice that they're giving everybody these moments, because they're shifting from the plot of the rebellion to the Jedi plot. So we're kind of, I just like all those scenes. Like, I love the scene with Zeb and Ezra just sitting out and hanging out and watching the sunset and drinking, hopefully, Cokes and not a beer because he's a minor together, and just having that one last, and I'm glad it was Zeb too, because I started thinking about it, like, I like that it's Zeb in that scene, because Zeb was really Ezra's first friend on the ship. Because back in, like, I think it was Fight or Flight. Yeah, Fight or Flight, which was, like, episode 3. You know, like, Zeb was the guy who, like, got them all messed up, and then they were forced to work together. And, like, Sabine was like, ugh, boy. So, like, Zeb was, like, his first friend on the ship. Because, like, Hera was, like, the mom, and Kanan was the teacher. But, like, Zeb's, like, his brother. And so I'm glad it was Zeb that Ezra had that moment with, and not, like, anybody else. And because anybody else, like, Hera would have mommed him, Kanan would have teachered him. Sabine is his peer, but it wouldn't have the same effect, I think, for me. It would have been had that, like, weird, like, romantic teeny, like, Sabine, I'm leaving. She's like, I know. She's like, don't you want to say anything to me? No.
See, I wouldn't want to be ya.
Yeah, just like Yoda. I also love the look of Adelon. I appreciate it so much more now. It's a cool planet. Also, did you see the chopper like chasing the little scrubbing bubble guy through the ship? Like, that's just like a nice like little thing.
Reminded me of the Porgs a little bit.
Yeah, yeah. I can't take the spiders seriously. Their googly eyes make me laugh. Like, every time they move, and it's like, oh, it's supposed to be scary, but I'm like, they got googly eyes! I can't take the spiders seriously at all.
Yeah, I do, but not too bad.
They're
like a video game. It's just like, just shoot for the eyes. I could totally see the video game of that, you know, coming out.
I had half a thought of saying, like, anybody who has faces in the episode art for this episode, you just put googly eyes on them. I did have half a thought of, like, being like, Chris, this is a need for this episode. Everyone must have googly eyes.
Just glue googly eyes on all the spiders in your house and you won't be scared of them anymore.
I just imagine, like, the poor, like, because I have a bathroom spider, because I have really high ceilings. So I have, like, a little spider that just, like, hangs out above my shower, and he doesn't bother me. He just hangs out there, and I'm just like, hello, shower friend. And I just imagine me crawling up there trying to glue a googly eye on him. He'd probably be like, fuck!
Yeah, he probably would not take it well.
No, he's so tiny, though. Like, he's just, like, a little, like, shower friend spider. Like, he's just hanging out. He's not hurting anything. Now, if he comes down into the shower, then we might have to have words. But... nah, he's just a happy little shower friend hanging out of my reach where I can't reach him, so he's fine. If I can't reach him, he's fine. So, and finally, my last note. I found some season 4 foreshadowing that I never noticed before. So, Zeb jokes with Ezra in this episode that they might even have the Empire toppled before Ezra gets back and then they can swap war stories. That's exactly what happens in the final episode of the show. Ezra gets taken away. He goes away with Ron and all the Purgle and stuff like that. And in his absence, the Ghost Crew helps topple the Empire. They liberate Lothal. We know from the Star Wars comics that Hera and Zeb both fight in the Rebellion. They're at the Battle of Scarif. They topple the Empire in Ezra's absence. All we need now is Ezra just to come back so Zeb and Ezra can swap war stories. I got feels and I got chills when I heard that. I was, what?
I'm just thinking about it. They still see each other before. After this.
Oh, no, I'm talking about season 4. It's foreshadowing for season 4.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, I mean, but I mean, like, when Ezra leaves in season 4, Zeb's right. Like, they topple the Empire while he's gone, and now we're just waiting for Ezra to come back. But I got chills when I heard that. I was like, that's the season finale right there. Or not the season finale, the series finale. And I was like, I don't know. This episode's pretty straightforward. There's not, like, a lot of debating points.
No, not really.
I know. It's like, cool. I agree, too. I'm not a fan of episodes that we can't, like, debate.
I don't have an awful huge amount of notes for these. For this episode, for sure.
I think the only thing that that might be worth debating is I took the spider's side in this episode.
Nah, you already know. I'm with you on that one. I'm going to back up on that one.
I'll break that down in season 3. So, anyway, season 3, act 3. Act 2?
Act 2.
Sabine is alone and facing the spiders. She does some fancy sharpshooting, finding that they can be killed when hitting them in the eye. She retreats to the sensor, but when the spiders approach, they stop just short of the sensor. But luckily, the ghost shows up and scares the spiders off. And Zeb is like, I hate multi-leggers, which is like the best line of the episode. The entire space family is there, and they zoom in on Rex's location. And they head out, but Zeb is not down with fighting some spiders. Same here, Zeb. Same here. They leave Chopper with the ghost and to keep an eye on things, and they descend into the caves of the spider home, but they find a split in the path. At first, Kanan wants Ezra to go with Hera, but the team is about to split for a Jedi mission, so Hera sends Ezra with Kanan so they can continue to prepare together. And when Zeb points this out, Hera says they have to get used to not having a Jedi around. Ezra and Kanan find spiders first, and Ezra's like, oh, an animal! I can connect with animals! This is my thing! And Ezra reaches out with the Force to the spider. But the spider is like, no! Fuck off! You're in my house! Fuck off, human! You're in my house! Fuck off! And Kanan kills the spider before they take off running. Fuck off! You're in my house! Fuck off! And Hera's group finds all the gross stuff, like spider eggs. Just a pile of spider eggs just laying in the ground. You know, I didn't put it in my show notes, but this episode kind of reminds me of the Geonosis episode with the Underground Queen and all the wormy things. It had kind of a similar feel, now that I think about it.
Yep, especially with what you're coming up right up on here.
Yeah, I just realized that. But they find Rex, and whoa, he's okay. And this was one of those episodes that made me really scared for Rex's life. And they pull him out of what looks like to be a bunch of roots. But they're not roots. They're spider legs. And the spider is like, hey, that's my lunch. Hey, bring back my lunch. That's not nice. And it's a sprint and a fight as the spiders through the spider tunnels as the two groups rejoin each other. And they rush outside and hop onto the ghost as the spiders start crawling all over their ship. And when they try to take off, the ghost doesn't move. The spiders have covered the ship in webs, and they're stuck there. What'd you think of Act 2?
That's pretty good. Like I said before, the spiders were kind of like, they kind of like reminded me of like if there's going to be a Rebels video game, one of the boards might be shoot the spiders in the eye. It sort of reminded me of the Tron video game, too, that had had some electronic spiders in it. I sneaked ahead and looked at your notes, and I'm very surprised not to see this note in there. I thought this was a note we were going to both have in common. They did lightsaber flashlights.
I almost put it in there. I thought about it. I was like, I love lightsaber flashlights. I love it.
And that scene with Rex hanging from the ceiling is totally cribbed from Alien. Like, it was a cut scene in Alien, and they actually used a scene like it in Aliens, of except luckily for Rex, he didn't have babies, you know, planted in his belly.
Blech.
So that was good. Yeah, we have this time we have the line we gotta get used to not having him around.
Yeah, I have a note about that.
And, yeah, there's some more foreshadowing for you. And my only other note is space web. I was like, I had to stop and, like, back it up because my monitor's a little dark. And I'm like, oh, it's space webbing. Of course it's space webbing. I wish they would have had the spiders sort of Spider-Manning their web around a little more and, like, shooting it at people. That would have been fun.
The thing I notice is, like, they have this web that's surrounding the ghost and, like, that's, like, you know, has the ghost stuck to the ground. There's no webs in the actual caves, though.
No, yeah. It's like, something they can do, but, yeah.
Like, I was waiting, like, you know, like, them running and, like, one of them, like, runs into the web and gets stuck and they have to, like, pull each other out and, you know, like, I noticed that, like, the caves are very clean with no webbing. So, well, it is kind of odd that, like, they could suddenly do this with the ghost. It felt very plotty.
Or it points to the fact that they're more intelligent than you would think, because, mm-hmm. you know, they're actually using the web to keep the ship down, and, you know. So.
Yeah. Yeah,
it was weird. It was weird that it just sort of showed up there.
Yeah.
But that's all I got for part two, really.
I'll do my, shallow note, medium note, and long note. So, my shallow note is, I love how the great and brave warrior Zeb doesn't like spiders. And actually, he doesn't like things with more than two legs. Like, I think
it's
that's
sort of like Indiana point. Jones with snakes.
But it's not that it's spiders, it's that they have multiple legs. Because he calls them multi-leggers, and he's like, and he also says anything with more than two legs is just unnecessary. Zeb was just so great in this episode. I love him.
Well, now
him.
We know how to torture Zeb with space centipedes.
My kind of medium note is I'm glad that they gave us a moment where Ezra failed, because he's been super successful all season with his like animal Dr. Doolittle abilities. And it's nice to show that he's not perfect all the time, and it's needed. You need to make sure like your character's not perfect all the time. They have to have failures and flaws, or else like he would be like a Gary Stu. Like he just would be like OP'd, overpowered if he didn't fail every once in a while. And I also had my last note is about Hera's line too. Hera's line about not having Jedi around is actually really poignant about the rebellion as a whole. Because Jedi, we have seen from Clone Wars, can change the tide of a war. And the Rebels really struggled, and when I say the Rebels, I mean like the original trilogy Rebels, really struggled until like Luke showed up. And Hera has always had Kanan at her side since she was 18, so pretty much like her entire Rebel career when she finally set out and started being a Rebel. And so like she's used to having him there. And you're right, it is foreshadowing to season 4. And now they have to learn how to do things without a Jedi, because there can't always be a Luke or an Ezra or a Kanan or an Ahsoka with them at all times.
Yep. They're just plain old Rebels now.
Yeah. And I just wanted to note, like, this is one of the reasons why I love Resistance so much. It's one of my favorite parts of the Resistance, because there's no Jedi in Resistance. There's no Jedis, there's no Sith, there's no Force users. So they have to problem solve and use their strength and their wit. To do things that would be super easy for a Jedi. And I think that's part of one of the interesting things about Resistance, is because normally a Jedi would be like, oh, that heavy thing is there, let me just use the Force to lift it. They're like, no, this heavy thing is stuck and we have to figure out how to move this. So that's one of the things I like about Resistance. So, but that's all I have for Act 2.
All right, you want to wrap this puppy up in spider web?
No, let's save the puppy. So, Act 3?
Act 3.
Well, the ghost is covered in spider webs, and they're not going anywhere. And the spiders are crawling all over the ship going, hey, give us back that vintage meat! That old man is our snack! But I don't mean like a snack in a sexual way that you humans use that slang term. I mean like we're gonna eat that man. We got him fair and square. Give him back. And not even the ghost guns are useful against the spider's armor. They all get back together and they start trying to think of solutions. The spiders didn't attack them before on the base because, you know, now you guys have went into the spider's house and you stole their lunch and you threw a grenade in their house and you started shooting up their house. So maybe that's why, like, the spiders are pissed off at you. And Hera points out that they haven't overrun the base yet. And then Sabine remembers that the spiders won't go near the sensor marker, which surrounded the base. But now they have to get outside to get to the sensor marker. The spiders breach the airlock and Rex exclaims that he'll hold off the spiders as a distraction. And Ezra has a plan, and the ghost crew fight their way out there. With Zeb and Hera covering them, Ezra and Kanan use the Force to throw Sabine over the spiders to the sensor markers. But they overthrow her off the side of a cliff. Nice going, you guys.
I like how they're just sort of like, oh, oh, oh.
I love that moment, because like it's something that you can tell, like, they've done this before, so they, like, throw her, and it's going great, and then they overshoot her, and you see the look on, like, Kanan and Ezra's face of, like, oh, shit! It's great. Meanwhile, Rex is just brawling inside the ghost with a spider, and Rex is just sitting there going, I didn't survive 7 seasons of the Clone Wars for this shit! And he drop kicks a spider right out of the ghost. Well, Sabine is fine, and she's able to climb back up, and she's like, you fucks almost killed me! This is why I get a jetpack in season 3. But there's no time for teenage swearing, because they got shit to do to get rid of the spiders. And her theory is correct, and the spiders don't like the sensor marker. Kinda wish they explained why, I'm assuming it has to do with the frequency. And Sabine shields them while the Jedi get to work cutting off the webbing. Once they're clear, they all pile back inside the ghost and fly back to the base. The next day, the Rebels are setting up sensor markers about every 3 feet around the base, because no one wants an infestation of googly-eyed spiders running amok. And Sabine and Kanan are watching, and Sabine is like, Dad, just go talk to Hera. And Kanan is like, why should I talk to Hera? I don't understand. The writers are making us not openly admit our feelings of love for each other until season 4, which is really fucking stupid. And Sabine is like, yeah, it is really fucking stupid. You two have clearly loved each other since your first pre-season one short. Who knows why they waited until season four to make you guys admit feelings, and who knows when you guys bound to go wow wow to make Jason Syndulla. But whatever, Hannah loves you, and she's worried about your mission. Go talk to your space wife, Dad. And Kanan goes to talk to Hera. And I have to brace myself for my Kanera feelings, because I love the Kanera ship, and I love them so much. And Kanan lies that he thinks that they're going to be okay, which his space wife calls him out on. And Hera says that she wanted to face this with him and be there for him. And guys, Kanan makes a promise that he'll see her again. He'll see her when she does it until he's dying, because he gets blind next episode, guys. He's blind. But he keeps his promise in his dying moments when he sees her again. One last time, and I'm dead, because he'll die when he sees her again. And they hug, and I died again. Meanwhile, Ezra is pouting because his Dr. Doolittle powers aren't working. Another spider moans he's by, and the spider's just minding its own business, enjoying its morning walk. And then Ezra tries to invade its mind with the Force. And the spider's like, fuck off! You blew up part of my house last night, and you killed Steve, you fuck! Fuck you! Fuck off! And get out of my mind! Continues on its way. Ezra lays back, and up in the sky he sees a convery, which means our actual queen. I meant to write our actual queen Ahsoka Tano, but I wrote our actual queer. I wrote our actual queer Ahsoka Tano, but I actually am very much a fan of queer Ahsoka.
I was
so
reading along, and I'm just like, okay, I see what's going on here.
Actual queer queen Ahsoka Tano shows up. Ezra consults her about the spider connection, and Ahsoka says that every time she thinks she understands the Force, she realizes how little she actually knows. It's time for them to go. Kanan, Ahsoka, and Ezra leave for Malachor to destroy my feelings next week. The end!
Hope, someday we'll find it. The spider connection. Ahsoka and Ezra and me.
Can I go ahead and give my spider note?
Okay.
Okay, so... You know, the more, like, on the second rewatch, I understand the spiders a lot, and I feel for them, because no wonder that they're like, no, fuck off, get off my brain. Because these spiders were just chilling out, they were hanging out, and they were living their lives, they're having really good days, and then out of nowhere, these strangers come out of the sky and invade their home and set up a base next door. And the spiders are like, okay, fine, whatever, it's fine. And then Rex and Sabine come to the spider's front lawn, and the spiders are like, cool, we have DoorDash now. I didn't know we had DoorDash in this part of the galaxy. Look at that free food. This is great. And they get Rex. Then the space family go into their spider house, and they blow up parts of their spider house. They kill their family members of the spider families. And then this kid Ezra is trying to force his way inside their brains. No, I'd be pissed off at them too. Don't let this kid invade your brain because he killed Spider Steve last night and they blew up part of your fucking house. He doesn't deserve your Force connection, spiders. You spiders are good. You spiders stand up for yourselves. These snaps for you, spiders, because these fuckers invaded your home. Good for you, spiders. Fuck off, Ezra.
Yeah, that's why Star Trek has the prime directive, man, so you're not pulling this kind of bullshit.
I just had that moment, like, at the end, like, when, like, Ezra tries again, and the spider's just like, blah! I was like, well, yeah, this guy, like, this kid just, like, killed Spider Steve and, like, blew up half their house. I'd be pissed off at this child, too.
I also think spider consciousness compared to, like, space whale consciousness and what were those other things? They were sort of like space cats. Manta rays.
Yeah, and then you have Lothcats, too.
You know, I and Lothcats, I think the spiders are way less human, and so it's not as easy to get on their wavelength, you know?
I actually really liked what Dave Filoni said in Rebels Recon, that the spider, like, everything on Adelon, including the spiders, are just older in the Force, too. So they're different from, like, something that's more modern, like Lothcats. Like, Ezra's always been around Lothcats. Like, they've always been part of his life. And, like, they're, like, more of his contemporary, while these spiders and everything on Adelon is much older in the Force. So I did like that kind of connection, too, that, like, why he couldn't connect with them. I thought that was a really nice explanation.
And I think I disagree slightly that they don't really have to explain that their sensors were scaring them off, because it sort of reminds me of, like, you know those things you'll buy that are supposed to scare mice and bugs off? You plug them into your wall, like, they give off an ultrasonic thing. I think that was sort of the idea I got from it immediately, you know?
Yeah, I would say, like, me as an adult, I understand it. But, like, I was thinking, like, maybe, like, a younger audience member might not get it. So even if they had a line of, like, oh, the frequency must be doing it. Or just, like, so, like, I don't think, like, a little kid would grasp it as fast as, like, me as an adult would.
The scene of her wielding the sensor was very much like, it reminded me of the original Night of the Living Dead, of how when they would scare the zombies off with a torch. My only other note is Ezra calls himself the Last Jedi.
Oh!
Yes, he does.
But he kind of does it jokingly.
Yeah, well, he's wrong. Wrong, Ezra.
He is, but...
He's joking. He's doing the, like, here I am, the Last Jedi, and I'm going to get killed by some bugs or something like that. But at the same time, he's still thinking he's the Last Jedi.
I'm not
just the latest Jedi. He's the Last Jedi. Thinks he's going to outlive us. Well, I guess Ahsoka technically isn't a Jedi.
But I'm Googling just
he's going to outlive Yoda, does he? All right, whatever, Ezra. I guess when you're a punk kid, you think you can outlive everybody.
I'm just double-checking dates. Okay, this did come out before Last Jedi. So
yep.
I thought it did. I was just like, what if this was the same year? And that's funny. So
I don't. That's all I got for part three.
Oh, okay. So
yeah, I told you I didn't have much notes.
I realized something as I was, like, watching them, like, using the ghost cannons, like, on the spiders that wasn't doing, like, any effect. They should capture some of these spiders and, like, mail them to an Imperial Star Destroyer and then just, like, let the spiders loose.
See, I'm thinking having the spiders on the planet is actually a great thing for them, because now they know how to keep them away from their base. But anybody else, if any Imperials come sniffing around and land on the planet, probably a bunch of them are going to get eaten by spiders. You know, it's a nice little alarm system, you know, attack dog system going all around them.
That's actually a very valid point. Do we see the spiders in Zero Hour when Thrawn invades the planet? I don't think we do.
I don't think we do.
Because that would have been, like, a really interesting moment of, like, them hurting spiders at the Imperials.
They just come pouring out of the ground, you know, like, what was that movie? Starship Troopers.
Yeah, like, because I was thinking about that, like one of these spiders, like, being let loose on a Star Destroyer could do some damage, because, like, there's only one way to kill them. And, like, if you set, like, 20 loose on a Star Destroyer, like, these things would just wreak havoc.
That would be a nice horror episode, to find a Star Destroyer just all filled with cobwebs and spiders after eating everybody on it.
Yeah, but, like, now that I think about it, I don't think we see the spiders when Thrawn invades the planet. But you're right. Like, that would be a really good defense for Adelon to have the spiders there against the Empire. Huh. There's a lot going on in Zero Hour, though. Like, there's a lot. So it'd been just, like, one more thing to animate. I love the effect of the lightsaber slicing through the webs. It's just cool how they just kind of, like, burn away.
Yeah, it looked very much like you would imagine it would look.
Yeah.
Which is cool, because you're imagining a thing that doesn't exist, that uses imaginary physics, but it looks like that's what it would look like if that's what you were doing.
Yeah. Rex freaking drop kicking a spider out the door is just the best. Like, first he's, like, wrestling with it, and he just backs up and runs at the spider and just drop kicks it out the door.
I like in Star Wars when they find, you know, they've got blasters and lightsabers, but eventually, just kick it.
And for Rex, like, that's the great thing. Like, he is, like, a blaster master, and he's just like, fuck it! And I love Grunkle Rex. I love old Rex. I love seeing him like, not so different from his Clone Wars counterpart, like, him being younger. But he's just, you know, you can tell, like, he's at a different place in his life, and he's just very much a different, older, more wiser character, and sometimes you just gotta fucking kick a thing instead of shooting at it. I love old Rex. So this episode just, I have such problems with season four, with them making them wait for Kanan and Hera to say that they love each other. And then they make it like a surprise. Like, Hera's just like, Kanan, I love you. And he's like, whoa, really? You love me? And she's like, yeah, you love me? Whoa. Like, it's so fucking dumb because they clearly love each other right now.
Well, I like, personally, looking back at it myself, and this was my reaction when that happened later on, was clearly they're dating. Clearly they're meeting up at night. They're having sex.
They had to because she's pregnant by the end of the show.
You know, right, exactly. They've been clearly in a relationship, you know, not just acting like two people who, like in Cheers, where, you know, they're in love with each other, but they don't want to admit it to each other, you know, like Who's the Boss or whatever, any of those shows. But they clearly have a working relationship and love each other. So, like, it was, I think with Star Wars really tries to avoid a romantic element to it. You know, that you got to have it somewhere because you got to have Anakin and Padme. And, you know, you got to have Han and Leia. And actually, and you have Kanan and Hera. Those are our only real three Star Wars relationships of any kind of quality. All are end in pregnancy. And two out of, we don't know about what Hera's kid ends up doing, becoming of Hera's kid. But we know that, like, Han's kid and Anakin and Padme's kid all go off to create a bit of a stink. So I think they're very sparing with it, and I think they wanted to, they didn't want to have to put in romance in it, so they kept it sort of a secret. But I think it would be more of a secret for little kids, you know. Whereas adults, it's just like they're obviously an item, you know, the way they make decisions together, you know. Otherwise, why would Kanan be sort of in the position that he's in any more than anybody else, you know, as sort of space dad, you know? So it's a weird little thing. Yeah, it's a weird little inconsistency in it. Yeah.
Here's my response.
I don't have an answer for you, Hope.
Because I don't mind it here, and I like it here and stuff like that. While you were talking, I went up and I got my Star Wars Rebels visual guide, right? So the reason I got the visual guide, because then I can see Hera's age. And Hera and Kanan met when she was 18. At the season one, she's 24, so that's 6 years. And so she's 25 right now. They've been together 7 years. And then by the time they get to season four, that's what, like 3 more years? So that's a decade. We'll just say it's about a solid decade that Kanan and Hera have been together. And the fact in season four, she's like, I love you. And he's like, whoa, really? After a fucking decade? It's bullshit. It's bullshit writing. I have a problem with it. Like,
well, that's the thing is, I could see if they had a dysfunctional relationship.
Yeah.
And they got to that point, but they don't. They obviously have a very good functioning relationship.
And
you know,
they love each other right now.
Yeah. No, you're absolutely right. It's a character. It's a strong inconsistency with both characters.
I know. And it's not even, I don't have a problem with it here. I don't mind that the romance is not the forefront of the show. The problem I have is, already knowing what happens in season four, where they've been together a decade and they tell each other they love each other for the first time, and she's obviously pregnant
If they wanted to stick that, they should have made them more as buddies in the first
and like more
three seasons.
Here. Yeah.
And they're obviously not just buddies.
Yeah. So, like, I don't have a problem with this scene. I have a problem with it in season four, which I'm sure we'll come back to when we get there. So, since we've already seen since we've already seen the series, and we both know that the entire status quo of the show is about to change with Twilight of the Apprentice next week, I'm really glad that they gave us one more adventure with the Space Family. It's just like one last romp. Everyone's together, because everyone's been kind of very separated this season. Like, there's been a lot of pairings. Like, we had, like, Kanan and Sabine in an episode, and we had, like, didn't we have her and Ezra? I don't remember, but everyone's been, like, kind of paired off all season, and they haven't been on too many adventures where it's everybody. So, like, we know that everything's about to change next week, so I was just really happy that we got, like, one last adventure with all the Space Family together in one group.
Yeah,
so that
was
just
a little
one
and
done
sort of story. Yeah.
Yeah. Cause especially with everything changing. Because, like, after next week, the entire tone of the series changes. Everything's different after next week. And I just also love the sunset imagery, too. Like, the sun is setting on how Rebels currently is. The story is about to change. Everything is shifting. The plot is about to change. It's about to go into darkness, just how, like, so much of the episode happens at night. But eventually the sun rises again, and it's going to be light, which we'll see in the series finale when they liberate Lothal. And I just really love, like, the sunset imagery of this episode, just kind of setting on what we know of Rebels so far to the darkness that will be the rest of the series for it to come back again at the end. So I just really love that imagery.
Yeah, between that and it is sort of like, hey, it's a sort of self-contained adventure, but you see the little cracks showing up. Of that it's gonna be different, and then the sunset at the end, it's just very nicely done. It's very subtle and just sort of not something we probably picked up on it, like, subliminally when we first watched it, and we're like, there's a, you know, probably sensed a little bit of, like, that, like, sadness that comes with imminent change. Mm-hmm. But probably didn't, you know,
we
consciously
didn't know.
Realize it.
Yeah, and that was what I was kind of talking about at the beginning of us recording, was just, like, the first time I watched this, I was like, oh, this is fine, you know, like, they're going, it felt very, like, a run-of-the-mill episode, just like, mm-hmm. Oh, they're on an adventure, and they're setting up the Rebel stuff, and now they're going on their thing. Well, like, now that we know what the rest of the show is, like, this episode has a lot more weight to it, like, because we know everything that's about to happen. We know that when Kanan makes that promise of, I'm going to see you again, he's not going to see her because he's going to get blinded, which just hurts my feelings. Like, there's just so much weight more to this episode. So, like, it's very nice on the second rewatch knowing what's coming.
I agree.
And my only other note was about the Bendu, which is what we talked about already. So, about, yeah. Like, Bendu meaning
Ahsoka. I love the Bendu, but I like where he showed... I think where he showed up makes more sense.
Yeah, I do love that drawing of Ahsoka and the Bendu. It's a really cool drawing. Please give us a book of just Dave Filoni drawings from Clone Wars and Rebels. Please, 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 please. Just, like, put them all in, like, one, like, book and put it in a... I don't even care if they're, like, pencil... Like, I don't even care if it's, like, a smiley face on a napkin. Like, photocopy that napkin and put it on a page and, like, put them all in a book and, like, sell it. Like, I just want a book of Dave Filoni sketches.
I didn't know. I've seen a lot of his sketches. I didn't realize they were him. But, I like, his style is very distinct. And,
yeah.
I'm gonna, after we're done, I'm gonna go look for, see if I can find some nice images of that to use. They would make nice screensavers.
Oh, yeah.
Nice, like, screensavers for my computer.
You can absolutely just, because, like, there's so many Dave Filoni sketches. Some of the nice one is, after next week's episode, yeah, it was Twilight, he released a series of sketches of Ahsoka's descent afterwards. Because, like, you have that last image of her walking into the cave at the end of next week's episode. And for Tops, like the card company Tops, he released, I think it's six, might be seven, images that are like red, black, and white of like Ahsoka's ascent. And the very last image is the door of the world between worlds. Well, of course, at the time, we didn't know what that was. We didn't know what that meant. But, like, that's the only look that we have of Ahsoka walking into the cave to the world between worlds that we have. We don't have anything else of that story except for, like, those 6-7 images from Dave Filoni. And they're really pretty. Like, you see the Convor and, like, her descending into water and, like, there's the world between world door. It's just really cool. But yeah, like seriously, just Google Dave Filoni sketches. And actually, you could probably go to his Twitter. He likes to post a lot on his Twitter too. You just have to click on the media, just like the media tab, and then you'll pull them all up. So there's a lot. There's some on there, but just I just want a book of Dave Filoni sketches. That's all I want. So, but that's all I have for this episode. Did you have anything else? It's kind of nice to have, like, two chill episodes in a row with, like, Chopper base and then, like, Chopper and AP5 before we get into the feelings.
No, I don't have anything else.
All right, well, score it up, Chris.
Score it up. Yeah, I thought it was a solid one, but not an outstanding episode. I'm giving it a solid 7.5.
I kind of feel the same way. Like, it was a nice episode. It was one nice last adventure with the Space family before everything goes to hell this week. It's a nice venture, and honestly, the spiders are really right to be pissed off and to be like, fuck off, you took my lunch, fuck off.
Yes, I would have scored this higher if there would have been some sort of understanding reached with the spiders in this episode.
Yeah, that would have been nice of like,
especially before they just like murdered a bunch of them.
And like when Sabine threw the grenade and like blew up part of their house, I was like, yeah, the spiders have a right to be pissed off.
Yeah,
they really do. You know, after our talk, I'm gonna agree with you. I'm gonna bump up my score. I think it's a very solid 7.5 out of 10. So.
Oh, cool.
Well, as always, we would love to hear your feedback on iTunes, Twitter, or on the Two True Freaks Facebook page, especially on, like, Apple Podcast, iTunes, whatever, because, like, whatever it's called now, because if you like our show, it helps people find our show. So, like, when people type in, like, Star Wars podcast, the more reviews and, like, scores that we have on there, it makes it easier for people to find it, and we'll, like, people will find our show easier. So, like, please, please, please give us a review on there, because it really does help us, and, like, we'll read it here on the show. Tell your friends. And if you've been listening to us a long time and you haven't left us a review, why? What did we do to you? You don't have to actually do it. We love you.
We chop liver?
Yeah, I mean, we even like bad reviews. Like, Chris will read them.
I love the bad reviews. I eat them up.
And I'll cry. He'll eat them and I'll cry. So, it's fine. This week, our feedback comes from Facebook for our episode for the Protector of Concordon.
The Protector of Concord Grape Jelly. All right, this one comes from Paul C. Kelly.
Ooh, yeah.
We're switching it up this week. We're doing a little Beverly Hills Cop instead of the normal. So, hope you enjoy.
Sounds exactly the same to me.
All right, Paul C. Kelly said, I actually thought was part of a group that broke off from the original Death Watch. Didn't think he would be the actual leftovers of Satine's people. I almost pronounced it Saltine's people.
Saltine's.
When she's mad, that's what she is. She's Saltine. Saltine's people who I thought were obliterated. Thank you for using the word obliterated. I love the word obliterated. Makes more of an interesting twist where he originates from, the people that were on the good side at that time. Oh yeah.
Oh yeah. All right. You've already cheated on this one. This is my first time. Happy Dars Day. Thank you.
Dars spelled backwards is Srad.
Srad. Well, if you don't know what we're doing, excuse me, Chris hates American Kit Kats because he's a big old weirdo. So our friend, Dario Gonzalez, who is Chris's co-podcaster for Eat and Beat It, sends us candy from all over the world to review.
And this week, our candy comes from Japan, and it's Dar's chocolate.
I lied, Hope. It was another one that I'd eaten some of. I haven't eaten any of my Dar's.
I dropped my Dar's.
It's weird. The bag it's in, it looks like it's a Pop-Tart.
Whoa! But it's like, well, okay. I thought it was going to be long.
Whoa, it's got its own little, like, tray.
Oh, and the tray has
got their own
size.
Little cool Dar's tray.
Oh,
oh
the
my
tray
God,
has
they're
like
all separate
on it.
Little
is there candy. A bird?
How fiddly.
Oh, the tray has drawings.
How fiddly in Japanese is this? Oh my God, okay.
Oh my God, it's straight up chocolate. I thought it was going to be like a wafer.
I thought it was going to have like caramel in it because they looked like they'd be pockets of caramel.
It's just chocolate.
It's kind of like a little slightly fruity tasting like milk chocolate.
There's a really fat cat drawing on this bar, on this tray.
They're good, but I'm giving them an A+ on packaging.
Mm-hmm.
And I like how on my, I don't know if it's the same on yours, I bet you it is, on the little Dar's bag around it, you can see the where the candy bars have made a little Dar's impression.
Mm-hmm.
In the bag.
Because I thought it was like a wafer. I didn't realize it was just like little individual like glumps of goodness. So
this is like something you'd break out at a tea party, or you know, at your little girl would break out at her stuffed animal tea party and pull out the Dar's, and it's already in its little serving tray with little pictures of bunnies and bees.
Hmm.
But which is funny because the package is very like kind of like, I don't want to say adult because it doesn't have any nudity on it or anything, but it's just sort of like plain red like Dar's. Like
it looks like almost like a Lindt chocolate kind of packaging, but when you get on the inside, it's like cute little kid drawings.
Yeah.
That's cute. Thank you, Daria. We love you. Actually, I have a little housekeeping note. Because I just did the math, so this week is Dragon Con, next week will be Chopper Base, and then that would put the week after that. So, yeah, if my math is correct, the week that this episode is out, so you'll be listening to it right now, I don't know what day it drops, but me and Chris were just guests on the show Friends of the Force with Brad Whipple. And he invited us to be on the show to talk everything Resistance. And you know that we've been chomping at the bit to talk Resistance, but we're not going to be covering it in the show for at least another year. So Brad was just like a super lovely host. He was wonderful to chat with. Like, we had a blast doing it. So look, check out Friends of the Force this week that you're listening to the show right now, unless you're listening another time and then just go back and find it. But I just wanted to say thank you, Brad, for having us on your show. If you want to hear us talk about Resistance, just look up Friends of the Force. So it should be coming out the same week that this episode is. If my math is correct, I'm not positive. I think he said the 6th. Didn't he say it's coming out the 6th?
Something around there, yeah.
Yeah, so just check that out because me and Chris were just recorded for that. It was a lot of fun. So thank you so much, Brad, for letting us be on there.
Yes, it was very nice meeting him, and I found out he lives one town over from me, basically.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. He's like maybe like an hour and a half drive away from me.
Well, that's not too bad. Better than me, where I'd be like a day drive away from me.
I'm just always surprised when we have someone on the show and they're from the same state as me, you know?
And we want to try to find a time where we can have Brad on our show in season 3.
Yes.
So we're going to try and have him on our show too. So check out Friends with the Force, you guys. They're really positive. They're super fun. They pretty much what Friends of the Force is Brad interviews people. So he has just a different cast of people on every week. And he has two shows. Like, one is like a themed show where they talk about a theme or news or something. And the other one is called From a Certain Point of View, where he sits down and he interviews people about like Star Wars from their point of view. I highly suggest the episode with Alderaan and Rose. Rose is so interesting because she's from the United States, but she moved to Ukraine, and she works for an orphanage, and she helps like orphans and foster kids, and she takes care of them. And it's really interesting because like in 2014, Russia invaded Ukraine. So her story is very interesting because Rebels was running at the time. So she was using Rebels to help the children cope with Russia invading their country. And like, so she has just a really interesting story. And so that's the episode I would highly suggest listening to, because Rose is just amazing. And Brad just handled that interview really well. So check out Friends of the Force. We'll be on it the same week that this comes out, if my math is right. And if my math is wrong, well, then fuck. I'm wrong. But I just wanted to say thank you, Brad, for having us on. So anyway, where can people find you, Chris?
You can find me at twotruefreaks.com. That's our mega website on the interwebs. It's full of Two True Freaks podcasts, just millions and millions of them. Just a few weeks ago, I did a guest editor stint on Back to the Bins with Dario Gonzalez and Thomas DJ, where we all did our own comics. I think I mentioned that before. That just came out recently. And I was on Is It Jaws not too long ago, talking about the animated Lord of the Rings. But enough of me guest starring on my own network.
I forgot about the animated Lord of the Rings. Like, I just flashed back to childhood. Really,
yeah,
in The Hobbit.
I saw the movies.
Oh my god, and the animated Hobbit too. Like, Gollum scared me as a child. Like,
The Gollum in the animated Hobbit, and I'm trying to, his name was Brother Theodore, was the guy who did that, and he was a performance artist guy, and he was an old German Jew who had escaped the Holocaust, and he just did this sort of rant. He was playing a character, Brother Theodore, and Brother Theodore was sort of a ranting, cynical, old poet person, and anybody who wants to enjoy it, just have a very enjoyable experience. Go onto YouTube and put in Brother Theodore on Dave Letterman. But anyway, he just had this like crazy old man character. But he did the most terrifying Gollum of all Gollums. His Gollum, terrifying.
That scared me as a child.
Yeah. So check that out. Along with all, it's just a chest full of, it's an unlocked chest full of podcasts. You can just go there, and if you have the technology and know-how, you can just subscribe to the RI. You can subscribe to individual podcasts, or you could go onto our main feed and get everything on your RSS feed, or you can go to iTunes, and you can sign up with us there. And if you want to see what's happening on our shows in a more like sort of public sort of way, you can go to Facebook. We got the Two True Freaks podcast page / group on Facebook, and that has every show as it comes out, every brand new show, every stinking one of them that comes out, and it's pretty much every day at least one new show. We
Gene.
Are also what?
Gene.
Oh, yes. I'm getting to Gene.
Okay, I just wasn't sure.
We are also on Twitter. And our Twitter feed is run by the unbelievable giant size Gene, the podcasting machine. Oh, that's why you were you had a whole plan this time. Did you play that with, like, your armpit?
No, that was my mouth.
Oh, okay. Sorry, Gene.
Actually, Gene, when we were on Friends of the Forest, we were talking about you, and Chris just paused and waited up, like,
that episode too.
Yeah, I was like, no one on Brad's show's gonna know what this means, Chris. And he was like, we're doing it anyway.
I said, Gene will know what it means.
And I was like, Gene. Like, it was funny, so. Well, it's funny to us.
Anyway, on Twitter, we also have the Two True Freaks Cantina on Facebook, where you can go and just sort of hang out and chit-chat. See what the hell's up. And I believe that's about it for me. Where can they find you, Hope?
You can find me on Twitter at JGuysAndJedi. I run our Twitter account. You can also find me at Hope Molinax on Twitter. I have my own website, which is geekygirlexperience.com. And I'm also a fanfic writer on Archive of Our Own, and I have two fics. One is Forces of Gravity, which is a Thrawn fanfiction, which will be very nice in about, a few weeks when we get to season 3, and I finally have my blue husband. Oh. Ah, where was a Thrawn? And I also have another fic called The Lucky Leku, which I just added chapter 3 for. I'm almost done with chapter 4. So I'm thinking when I have about one more chapter with chapter 5, I'm going to start working on the next episode of my podfic for our show. So, but you can go ahead and go read chapter 3. I just posted it this last week, and I plan to post chapter 4 this weekend. So yeah, by the time this comes out, chapter 4 will be up. So yeah, check those out. It's called The Lucky Lucky. So
I'm not ready for next week. So.
Yeah, hang on, guys. It's going to be a long one next week.
Yeah, I'm already going to tell you guys it's going to be a long episode. Well, for one, it's an hour-long episode, so it's going to take extra time. But there's so much stuff that happens next week, and, like, Maul's back, and Ahsoka and Vader, and, like, the Inquisitors are all officially done with Rebels, which I'm not okay with, and... there's just going to be so much, and it's my perfect episode of Rebels. It's my 10 for 10. I'm just going to tell you now, it's my 10 for 10 episode of Rebels. Like, it is the best episode of Rebels, hands down. So, yep.
I guess I said spoiler, but at the same time, you made it so you have to listen to it, since seeing as how it's the best ever.
Kanan and Hera love each other. It's so fucking dumb. Bye.
Visit our website at twotruefreaks.com. Two True Freaks is always spelled TWOTRUEFREAKS.
You can email Two True Freaks directly at twotruefreaks@gmail.com.
Two True Freaks and all of its excellent affiliates are available on iTunes, and you can choose to subscribe to either the entire network if you wish, or pick whichever individual shows you want to follow. We have so many shows to choose from, there's just bound to be one that appeals to your particular fandom. Just search Two True Freaks with an exclamation mark at the end, space, and the number 2.
You can find Two True Freaks on Facebook. Just search for Two True Freaks. Dumbass. If you ever leave your house and you actually have friends, why don't you tell them about Two True Freaks?
If you've enjoyed our show, please, won't you take a moment to rate us on iTunes? That helps others find the show, too.
Thanks for listening.
And join us every Monday for new episodes of
Two True Freaks.
And this is your Uncle Don saying good night.
Good night, little kids. Good night.
We're off.
Good. Well, that ought to hold the little bastards.